Hello and welcome to episode 3 of the Sanyu Sisters podcast. I'm Tista.
And I'm Amber.
And we're so thrilled that you're able to join us today as we continue our journey learning how maternal and newborn specialists have sidestepped COVID to keep their research on track. Before we start, how's your week been, Amber?
Yeah, it's been good, thank you. I have just finished a set of night shifts this weekend. So we've had lots of babies born, we've had lots of mums looked after, but I'm really, yeah, really thankful for a hardworking team of doctors and midwives, and we definitely had a good laugh while we were at it. So that's been my weekend. How's your week been?
Yeah, good, thank you. We've actually spent the week working through my very own PhD approvals needed for ethics in order to set up our study in Uganda. And so the feedback from last week's episode with Hannah McCauley was actually so helpful and encouraging for me to hear.
Yeah, definitely. And you are certainly not alone. We've had so much fantastic feedback from those who've listened in. We've had Maddie in Liverpool really appreciating the guidance from Hannah on how to keep focused within research during COVID. And Dot from our very own Sanyu Research Centre was really fascinated to hear how invaluable ethics committees can be in facilitating high quality international research during the pandemic.
Yeah, and we also ran our very first ever Twitter takeover on Friday with Hannah, which was such a success, and so many brilliant and dynamic questions coming in from all over the country. Hannah was brilliant in sharing some practical tips and advice on how to muddle through the ethics processes internationally, whilst also providing lots of encouragement and guidance on how you can get involved in global maternal and newborn health. So if you haven't had a chance to read through yet, please do so on our Sanyu Sisters podcast Twitter page.
We absolutely love hearing from you and any feedback or comments that you have. So please do follow us on Twitter at Sanyu Sisters or Instagram at Sanyu Sisters Podcast to keep that dialogue going. This week, we are lucky to have our own supervisor, Professor Andrew Weeks, joining us, who's going to be chatting to Tista on how he has been able to keep supervising students during the pandemic. So let's have a listen to what Professor Weeks has to say.
Good morning, Andrew. How are you doing?
Hi, morning, Tista. Yeah, I'm fine, thank you. Fine.
Great, great. So I'm really, really excited to be able to speak to you this morning. And for those of you at home who perhaps don't know Andrew, I'd like to introduce Andrew Weeks, who is a Professor of International Maternal Health at the University of Liverpool. He's a highly experienced clinical trialist and the director of both the Sanyu Research Unit and the WHO Collaborating Centre for Research and Research Synthesis. He's currently working on over £10 million worth of innovative CTIMP and non-CTIMP projects committed to improving pregnancy outcomes and clinical care worldwide, particularly in poorer settings. And if that wasn't enough accolades, he's also my PhD supervisor.
The last one, clearly the most important.
Thank you so much, Andrew, for joining us. And we're so excited to be able to speak to you, particularly around the topic of supervision. And I know that besides Amber and I, you currently supervise several other PhD and MPhil students. How do you think the pandemic has affected your supervision?
It's been a very odd time, hasn't it? I think we none of us quite knew what we were coming into. And my portfolio, I guess, is different to some of my colleagues in that many clinical academics that working in medicine work very much on basic science projects as well as public health projects, whereas a lot of my work is public health, clinical work in global health settings, clinical trials. And so they weren't really affected as much as others would be by the closure of the labs. But what was affected, of course, was that all the international projects all had to close down. But it meant that they were all on slightly different trajectories with different times at which the first wave hit, different rules, different internal rules, and trying to keep up with all the rules in the different countries. It really has been very challenging indeed. It's a complete rethink of how we run things. And then we went rapidly into sort of overtime as suddenly we needed to get through the governance changes of all these different projects and make sure that they were correctly closed down, make sure that we looked after the staff who were working on the project. I mean, the project in India, for example, had started recruiting in January and then closed in March. But we had, 8 or 9 different researchers on the team who were suddenly in Nagpur and at risk of either being unemployed or not being able to get into work, not being supported if they got sick, having caring responsibilities around them. And we didn't really know whether the MRC was going to support us to keep going with salaries. So it was really it's been quite a challenging time.
No, it really, really has. Following on from these changes that you've mentioned with the pandemic and all the measures that have come in, how do you think that's affected the students carrying out these projects? And perhaps how has your supervision changed or adapted?
We run in the SANU unit a very sort of open system in that I share an office with PhD students and administrators, and we've chosen, instead of me being in a separate office, to have one big office together. That's got its pros and its cons, and I think it suited me. It allowed me to keep in contact with everybody on a day-to-day basis. I mean, you sit across the other side of the room and I could just sort of call across to you, and we had that sort of constant, and most of it was work, but also a sort of friendly atmosphere as well, I would hope. Of course, we've lost that because we've all suddenly moved away, and so our ability to keep in touch with everyone is diminished. So we've got our WhatsApp group for the unit, and we have our weekly sort of social catch-up, which is a weekly Zoom call that we have whereby we have an hour and we just go round to each person hearing sort of what they've been up to. And something I've really missed actually with my colleagues at work is just sort of meeting in the corridor, and those in America, what I call a water cooler conversation. it's a reality, isn't it, that you go to the coffee room. This is very British, so we have to go for a cup of tea, and you go and go to the tea room, and you bump into somebody, I don't know, from the Cochrane collaboration, or a visiting tutor, or one of my professor colleagues, and you end up just having a sort of random conversation about what they're up to. And I miss that, actually. Jarko Alfirovic, who's been up until recently head of department here, has been a wonderful mentor to me over 20 years now. And he's often my sounding board. I go to him with sort of ideas or with questions or with, what do you think of this, Jarko? Am I being bonkers here? Or those aren't conversations which you schedule. I sort of miss those informal conversations. But within our unit, that hour-long conversation on a Monday morning is a chance for us to have that sort of informal, you know, what have you been up to? Oh, child's isolated. What's happening about your house? Oh, have you got new doors on the back? You know, those sort of informal things, which I think is probably helpful for all of our sanity and keep us together as a team.
Absolutely. And I couldn't agree more, because supervision isn't just for academic support, but actually it's important for your overall wellness, which I think over the pandemic has been needed more and more. Have you found any other areas where your students have needed more support?
We've not been able to have the same sort of day-to-day conversations. I should be asking you the same questions, actually, because I'd be interested to know how much you communicate with your peers. Because often, if you've got a problem, you know how to do a graph in Excel, you don't necessarily come to me, and I may not be the best person, because I learnt my graph making techniques 30 years ago, and there's probably far better ways of doing it. And your better way actually would be to ask your peers, and somebody goes, "Ah, no, there's this great new program I found online, etc., etc." And it's that sort of the buzz of a healthy unit means that the conversations aren't all between you and me. My worry is, if we're not careful, we miss that student to student interaction, which would allow you to get all that just sort of informal tips of things, which are fairly simple, but you know, just are things you don't necessarily know and which you get from your friends. So My worry would be that we've lost that hive mind. Is that have you heard that phrase? Whereby the power of the group is far bigger than any individual, and you can come up with solutions as a hive, but you can come up with solutions as a group which actually are far greater than any of the individuals.
And I think that's a really interesting perspective, because the concept of supervision perhaps isn't from one single person, but as you say, a collective effort of supporting each other. Do you think there are any other ways that we could support students more?
I heard the other day, where was I reading yesterday, about groups who had a weekly catch-up, and they'd watch a YouTube video together, and which then you discuss as you go along. And as I heard that yesterday, I was thinking, I wonder if that would work. We've never, to be honest, done that, have we? We've not had a sort of a weekly journal club, and we've often thought about doing it. But I think that's one of the things about global health, is that so often there's people away, and research students who are overseas are a whole different item.
So true. How would you say the pandemic has changed your ability to supervise international students?
I don't know that it's changed my ability to supervise them, except that it's been such a busy period for myself and for those overseas students, that keeping in contact has been more challenging. Communication relies on internet connections at the moment, and when the internet connection is poor, then it becomes really difficult to have an hour long conversation, but a lot of it is, hello, can you, yeah, are you there? They are so frustrating, because you want to know what's going on, you want to assist, but then suddenly it clicks off, and then you say, okay, well, it looks if Zoom isn't working, let me try WhatsApping, then let me, maybe Skype will get a better signal. Is it my side? I mean, we assume that connections are bad on the other side, and if you're in rural Uganda, then clearly that's often a problem, but sometimes it's at this side as well, because the children were, whilst I was here, I've got three teenage children, and if they were all watching a video at the same time, which was streaming, then actually our signal becomes limited at this side. So then you've then got to go into the other room and say, okay, who's watching films? And, oh, Dad, oh, come on. You end up with a problem with signal at your side as well. So, and then if it breaks off and you just think, this is hopeless, we'll have to reconnect, actually trying to find a slot then for an hour or even a two-hour conversation sometime else in the week is pretty impossible, because your diary's completely full with Zoom calls, and the time outside of the Zoom calls are those times when you get a chance to review papers or to write your own papers. So that's something I've found has been a sort of increasing problem, and I apologise in advance to overseas students who haven't had as much of a share as me as they should have done.
As you say, many of these challenges, such as the internet connection, have existed pre-pandemic. However, during the pandemic, it's just heightened the problems that would have existed with connections even further. Have you found any new platforms or ways to engage with your PhD students, both locally and internationally?
We use Zoom quite a lot. And I think when the pandemic came, we were just moving across to Zoom. We'd for years used Skype. And to be fair, that had worked pretty well. And sometimes we'd used WhatsApp. It might seem strange, but a lot of the technology is much more advanced in Uganda than it is in the UK, because they've really never had a landline system for telephones. And so actually a lot of stuff is internet driven, and overseas calls, for example, going through a traditional landline system were hopeless. Whereas as soon as WhatsApp came along, suddenly you could get on a Wi-Fi signal somewhere and suddenly you could phone for very little cost, make international calls. So the advent of WhatsApp has really opened up our ability to communicate with others. And in fact, messaging, of course, messaging is so much easier because whilst a bandwidth may not support voice, you may keep dropping and then there's a delay, and but actually doing it on a WhatsApp message is very much easier. You can very easily link up with people and message, and in fact I spend a lot of time on WhatsApp messaging back and forwards with people in Uganda or in India. The very fact of messaging somehow seems a little bit more polite, that you can, you know, you don't have to immediately respond. If I need an immediate response, I know that I call somebody. So I think that the whole mobile phone access and the video calling platforms have really helped considerably. It actually doesn't matter to me at all where my PhD students are at the moment, so long as they got a good internet signal. I mean, when did we last meet face to face? March, I guess.
Yeah.
Which is odd because, you know, it feels that feels as if we're in communication and we see each other a lot, even though we haven't seen each other face to face. And I think it is a beauty of the video call, is that seeing somebody is somehow it's really quite a lot of communication, isn't it? And a telephone call or text message isn't quite enough. You somehow need that video connection.
Absolutely. And there's so much that can be gained from tone, which perhaps we're missing with just messaging. So I completely agree. It's so important to have that.
You can also tell if somebody's having a bit of a rough time.
Yeah.
Say the Sanyuung Zoom calls. You can sometimes tell just by their expression and that things aren't all easy for them. And actually in that public forum, they won't necessarily reveal that things are rough for them. My guess is that all of us have gone through highs and lows through the pandemic. And there's times where we've thought, oh God, I can't cope with this anymore. This isn't why I came into academic medicine. And you sort of see that when you see people's expression. And then I contact them later and say, yeah, you didn't quite seem yourself on the call earlier. How are things? And then you can talk on a level which you can't really talk on those public.
No. Obviously, being on calls with other PhD students and noticing what the pressures are that they're facing, do you think there are any additional pressures that students have faced as a result of the pandemic?
I think when we choose our careers, we're all making decisions, I guess, every couple of years. So certainly when you're developing, you're making decisions about your career and about how things are going. And the sort of things that go into those choices, I don't know, how much clinical work you want to do, or what direction you want to take clinically, or what lab work you want to do, or do you want to do more and more reviews of articles, or do you want to do some podcasts, or do you want to, we've got those choices, and you make those choices continually as you go through your career. And there's a whole number of things which come into those choices, and some of them is about what your family situation is, how you are feeling confidence-wise. Maybe it's to do with the amount of pressure you're under in other ways. And so our careers, or certainly why, I mean, I'm, mid-50s, and so I've been going through this and sort of honing this, shall we say. You know, I've adjusted my career over the last 30 years to get to where I am now. But then suddenly the pandemic came in, and suddenly everything was thrown out of kilter. You've not only got your projects which are crashing around the world, clinically the workload is intensified, and actually the need clinically is things that you haven't done for some time, and that's challenging. Then there's the worry about how the rest of the family are coping, and make sure that you're not neglecting your children or your partner, or in my case I've got elderly parents, and so how's that all going to work out? And how are they going to deal with being at home? Are they getting enough food? Are they going to get sick? And the whole question of sort of mortality is suddenly brought right to the fore, because my guess is that most of us know people who have died through the pandemic. And some of it has been COVID, some of it has been non-COVID related. But these things then put your whole life into perspective, and I think, what's life all about, and what is important to me in life, and am I running around desperately trying to get the latest paper written, and how much am I neglecting my family responsibilities for that, or my parents? Have I got my priorities right? All these things. So it's almost like you've got a very nice sort of house of cards that you've built up, and the pandemic comes as an almighty gale and flutters them all to the ground. And you think, oh, hell, I've got to reassess all these things. I think for many people has given us a bit of a sort of an unsettled feeling in the pit of our stomach. Am I doing the right thing? I'm being put into things which I'm not really comfortable about. Mental health wise, it's really been quite a challenging time for many people.
Yeah.
Although other people I speak to have said, well, it's been the making of me. This has been brilliant. Actually, the time to stop and to reassess and to and to reevaluate what's important in life actually has been brilliant. Who knows? Ask me again in 6 months and I'll tell you whether the sort of the reevaluation and the rebuilding of the house of cards, whether I've rebuilt them the same way or whether I've chosen a completely different style.
You mentioned being both a clinician and academic during the pandemic, and there'll be quite a few supervisors out there who are both clinical and academic, and obviously during the pandemic their clinical work will have increased and pressed on their availability. If a student had a supervisor who has become busier during the pandemic, what would you say, Andrew, is one tip you could give them to try and get the supervision that they need?
Oh, heavens. I thought you were going to ask me some simple questions. When you ask me if I'd do that, I'll ask you some easy ones. And that's not easy to answer at all, because it all depends on your supervisor. And I think for all of us who have worked clinically or have got clinical skills, we've all sort of offered to do more. In fact, so in women's health, I've been very lucky at the Women's Hospital in Liverpool. I've got fantastic colleagues, and they're very supportive, I think, of each other, and to be fair, of me as well. We've sort of got to know each other over the years, and they know that I do a lot of my work globally, a lot of randomized trials work. So in terms of the amount of clinical work I do, actually, it's relatively little. At the start of the pandemic, we just didn't know what was going to happen in maternal health. And it could have been an absolute disaster, both from maternal and fetal health. And I think we've all had, the thought of a maternal viral infection immediately throws up images of the problems with, with CMV or with HIV or any of those viral infections, rubella, and you just think, hell, we don't really know what we're dealing with here. Now, so far, so good. And actually, we've not been overwhelmed. We got prepared for it, and then it never quite happened as badly as we thought it was going to be. And so whilst I've said that I'm willing to drop everything to come back because ultimately that takes clinical work and care of women takes priority over the research. Actually, I've not been called upon, which is sort of quite a relief as well. Partly because it means my colleagues aren't being overwhelmed, but partly because actually I've got so much to do. Trying to drop it all will cause all sorts of knock-on problems for my students as well as anything.
Absolutely. And that initial period you were talking about where you'd been rostered to be on clinical duty, what were things that were helpful to you that students perhaps did that meant that they were able to get the supervision that they need?
we're lucky within our unit that we've built up quite a critical mass that we've now been able to create. We put in a few big grant applications during the pandemic, but it means that actually I don't need to be writing it all. There's other people in the unit who are experienced at writing grant applications. So Dot Lambert is a very experienced project manager and has been brilliant in terms of helping with protocols and with budgets and such like, because she's got that knowledge and has got examples of previous applications that we've put in. We're not creating everything from scratch. That has relieved the pressure on me a bit, because it means that I'm not providing all those answers. You've got that hive mind, which allows you to sort out problems amongst yourself. But I think you have to be a little bit more efficient during the COVID times. And slightly annoyingly, the Zoom and online video conferencing has meant that we sort of are more efficient. And it's very tiring being more efficient with one call after another. You don't really even get a chance to pop to the toilet in between calls. I think that's been part of the difficulty, is the inability to take unwinding gaps between meetings. So it has been very efficient, and we've blocked in times for supervision. The unit have access to my diary, which actually includes my social diary. So it wouldn't be very good if I was an international spy or something, because you can all see what I'm doing and when I'm taking my son to his badminton tournaments or whatever. But it does mean that there's you can see where I've got space. And I think that you've also learnt between your students that if you want to book me in as a time, you know, you try and give me a bit of a gap sometimes between meetings. And if I've got a full day of meetings, then you try not to squeeze in, you've got a half hour there just between 1 and 1:30. I'm going to jump in there. So I think we've sort of looked after each other, but it's been tough, I think, both for supervisors and for supervisees.
Yeah, and I think that's another really helpful point about being cognizant also of the big demands on your supervisor. And I think sometimes when you're a PhD student, your world is your PhD, and that is your focus. And so to actually be mindful that your supervisor also often has multiple other projects on the trot is really helpful. I personally find it really helpful seeing your diary, as I know that on that day he's chock-a-blocked. So it's better for me, from perhaps a strategic point of view, to perhaps find a time for a meeting when you've had that space and a little bit of time to unwind.
Yeah. As you know me, I'm very open. I probably say all sorts of things which are a little bit too open. But you sort of know at the weekly catch-up when, I don't know, I had to go to the funeral of my uncle a while back, and then we had Viola's death and such like, and I'm fairly open, I think, about when, wow, things are getting really quite tough at the moment, and it's busy, and I've got this and that on. And at our weekly call, I'd like to think that we're able to share those sort of things, which also then gives you a bit of an insight into where I'm at during the week, so that you Absolutely. Can sort of adjust a little bit accordingly. And the same with you. Yeah. If you're getting very stressed about deadlines which are coming up, we can come in as a group, but that only happens if you're prepared to share where you're up to, because otherwise you won't understand why I'm just not answering something, or that I suddenly snap at you, because you don't sort of know where I'm coming at, and vice versa.
Definitely. And as we look to the future, what do you think supervision for research students will look like post-COVID?
We've sort of learnt how to do all this online supervision, and we've learnt that it's actually pretty good in many ways. It's got all sorts of benefits. We've been bounced into this. None of us wanted the pandemic. None of us would have chosen this way of doing things. But as with many things, both in the hospital and the university, it's forced us very rapidly to create alternative ways of doing things. And some of them will think, oh, this has been a disaster, you know, we'll go back to it as soon as it's finished. Other bits of it are, okay, well, that's an interesting alternative way of doing it. It's not ideal, but it's an option. And then other things you think, wow, this is really pretty good. This is, you know, this is really quite helpful. And I think that learning how to do online supervision with people, especially working in global health as I do, you can do online supervision for people, but you can't do it all that way. And I think that if, for example, the university were to say, okay, we're going to have 3 Sri Lankan PhD students, then trying to work out how to arrange that so it's optimal both for them and for us is critical. And in any application, I'd say absolutely getting high quality Wi-Fi is fundamental, and I won't do it if we don't have that, because you can't have calls which are continually delayed and which are blocked. So there'd be basic fundamentals like that, but also it would be the fundamental of having to know that person, so having some face-to-face time with that person, because it's only once you've had that period of face-to-face and of knowing that person that you can really properly understand where they're at and where that sort of supervision, and know what their skills are and they know what your skills are, and you can sort of develop the relationship. Because I think online you can't, it's quite difficult to develop an online relationship. Learning how to get the best out of those two, combining face-to-face and Zoom calls, I think is really important. And I think we've sort of learned a lot more how to do that, and I'd feel a lot more confident in future about taking overseas students, so long as we've got that time spent together, and you're assured of that they know your skills, you know their skills, and you've got some time together, and you've got good communication, I think it could work quite nicely.
Finally, our last question about supervising students. What is the one thing that you've learnt, Andrew, during the pandemic that you hope to take forward into your future supervision?
I think it's getting to know your student, having the space to do that. I guess I hadn't known that that was important, but it does make you realise how you need to find a space to do that. And that can be face-to-face, which is how we've usually done it. But if it's not, you need to find a way of connecting with people properly. And that's especially for the case for some of us who, you know, are of the more sort of geeky side of the spectrum. I mean, I was into social distancing well long before it came popular. I was ahead of the curve there. But I think it is then important that you keep closely linked to people, so you know where they are, they know where you are, and I think that really allows you to get the best out of them and them to get the best out of you, and it can be a really synergistic relationship. Whereas actually, if you really don't have that close personal connection, then it's so much more difficult. So I think it's the importance of that which has come home. And I don't profess to be brilliant at it. And we all sort of work within our baseline may have been pretty poor at it to start with. Other people are far better at socializing and keeping in contact with people. But I think I've realized how important it is and how much I need to focus mm-hmm. on it rather than just being all about the work side.
And that's such a super introspective and insightful point to end on. Thank you so much, Andrew, for joining us and giving us some really great take-home messages and points that are invaluable for PhD students and early career researchers, but also for supervisors too, to hear how they're doing it and managing in this COVID pandemic.
Not at all. Well, I'm looking forward to hearing these podcasts.
So, Amber, what did you think?
It was so great. There was so much content there, and I was really struck by a point that Andrew raised about the importance of getting to know his students and that reciprocal relationship that we need to have with our supervisors in order to sort of work well together.
Absolutely.
I just thought it was fascinating that although Andrew's been at this a long time, that he's still coming to some realizations and how crucial that has been for him. And I think his point about, he termed as water cooler conversations, really just struck a chord with me about how much we take for granted those sort of small interactions and idle chit chat at times, but actually how that is so foundational in our building blocks of building rapport with one another. And I think it's probably a bit of a challenge for all of us when we think about post-COVID and forming new connections and collaborations, possibly as students and supervisors, but maybe just as new collaborations within research groups. There's definitely a challenge for us to think about what is the best way to actually build that dynamic without the face-to-face interaction. And I do definitely agree with Andrew that if that's international, especially, that we have good Wi-Fi connections and specific time set aside to get to know one another, I think they're definitely essential ingredients. What about you, Tista?
No, I totally agree. I think what Andrew really highlighted well was the concept of peer support being key. That supervision doesn't only have to be between a supervisor and supervisee, but actually it's really great to have a network of people you can go to ask for help and advice. And whichever stage you are in your career, that peer support is invaluable. What's great in COVID is whilst before, perhaps that support existed within our own units, now with Zoomization and all these digital platforms, so many resources are now available to us, from webinars to Twitter chats and even, hopefully, podcasts too.
I hope so. What did you think at home? Did you enjoy today's episode? Please do let us know on our Twitter at Sanyu Sisters or on Instagram at Sanyu Sisters Podcast to keep that conversation going. And again, this week we'll be doing a live Twitter takeover with Professor Weeks. So please do join us at 12:30 on Friday the 27th of November and get your questions in to Andrew.
Next week, Amber will be talking to Nashna Maharajan, an early career researcher in Nepal, on how study management has continued in the time of COVID. So we can't wait for you to join us then. Until next time.